1101, Bombardier Transportation USA Inc. versus Nevada Labor Commissioner. For the record, while Counselor setting up, we received an amended notice of appearance for oral argument this morning. Holly Walker of the law firm of Fisher and Phillips is appearing, participating in oral argument this morning. And just disclosure, Ms. Walker at one point was a law clerk, my law clerk to be exact, with the Supreme Court.
I'd like to grant 3 minutes of my time to Ms. Walker, who's representing and speaking on behalf of the county. And with respect to my 12 minutes, I'd like to reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Good morning, and may it please the court. I'm Paul Trimmer. I represent Bombardier Transportation. This is a matter of statutory interpretation, and the issue before you is whether the work that Bombardier performed under its operations and maintenance contract with the Clark County Department of Aviation is covered by Chapter 238. It's not. We had several arguments in our brief. I want to focus on two of them, both of which are matters of first impression for this court, as well as matters of first impression for the Labor Commissioner.
Mr. Trimmer, could I clarify something before you proceed with your argument?
Yes.
You've indicated that this issue is a legal question for the court to decide.
Yes.
It's my understanding or my interpretation of that and from the briefing that there isn't a contest with respect to the Labor Commissioner's allocation of certain functions, maintenance or repair functions contained on pages 9, 10, and 11 of his decision. Is that right?
No, it's not. We dispute, the Labor Commissioner found that 80% of the work performed under this contract is maintenance work. He based that determination in large part on Union Exhibit 1, which is addressed in the back of our brief. Union Exhibit 1 was a summary of labor reporting that the union submitted during the case. It was prepared by two of the union's employees, and as addressed in our brief quite extensively, and is also argued before the Labor Commissioner, and as those two employees admitted under cross-examination, that entire report was based on their opinions, based on their assumptions, and based on their speculation.
Trying to clarify, you are contesting as part of the appeal the allocation that was made by the Labor Commissioner, and with respect to the allocation, would you agree that that question should be resolved by whether there's substantial evidence in the record to support that allocation or whether it's based on an abuse of the Labor Commissioner's discretion?
Yes. So I would agree that whether the 80% should be respected is a substantial evidence issue. And whether the only evidence in the record that supports that allocation was Union Exhibit 1 in anecdotal testimony from a handful of unions.
I didn't mean to take up your time or Ms. Walker's time, but I wanted to clarify that it isn't simply a legal question.
That's correct. And,
okay.
And I would add, from our perspective, the admission of Union Exhibit 1 was a shocking abuse of discretion.
Okay.
Both of the witnesses admitted they essentially made up the numbers that were contained within that exhibit.
But the significance, just for clarification, depending upon how the court assesses the legal question, it would apply to either 100%, 20%, or 80%, depending upon how you viewed the allocation made by the Labor Commissioner as to whether it's a prevailing wage project.
Yes, I think that's right. I would add, one of the arguments, and I'll get to it in a second, is whether or not the contract between Bombardier and Clark County was for the purpose of construction, reconstruction, or repair. From my perspective, it makes no difference whether 80% of the work or 93% of the work was maintenance. Yeah. In either case, a contract where the vast majority, 80% of the work, at least, according to the labor commissioner himself, is for maintenance, then it would not be for the purpose of construction, reconstruction, or repair.
I think you and I are communicating. I understand. I just wanted to clarify that. Sorry for interrupting
presentation. It's no problem at all. So the first issue is basic, and that's whether the contract is covered by the statute, and that requires the court. And it also required the labor commissioner to interpret 338.010, subsection 16. It's whether the operation and maintenance of McCarran's train system is a, quote, project for the construction, reconstruction, or repair of a public work. And it's not. As addressed in our brief, it's not a project. It's not a project within the common sense meaning of the word because it has no necessary beginning or end. It was a five-year contract, a five-year term that provided for continuous services as required by the condition of the train, as well as required by the preventative maintenance schedule that Bombardier had established at the location in accordance with the terms of the contract. It's also not a project within the meaning of that term as it would have been understood when the prevailing wage chapter was enacted in 1931. And the best evidence of that, there's no legislative history to look to for that issue. But the best evidence of that is both the language in the statute itself, including the enumerated examples in 338.010, where it lists a number of examples, such as the building of a jail, the building of streets, and other construction projects. None of those things are remotely similar to an operations and maintenance contract to maintain a train at the Cairn International Airport. Nor is it, and this is really important, is the contract, even if it were a project, is it a project for the construction, reconstruction, or repair of such property? That prepositional phrase is critical. It limits the application of the statute. And not only, the labor commissioner wasn't just wrong, he didn't even consider the scope of that prepositional phrase.
Let me ask you this, and I hate to interrupt you, but reconstruction, wouldn't that presuppose major repairs and very specific skills to yes. reconstruct? If you had to replace the track, if you had to replace certain things, that's included as part of this contract. And
we agree. And this case, at the time this complaint was filed, there was a companion lawsuit filed by the elevator constructors regarding a massive modification upgrade of the system, as well as the construction of the T3 train line. That lawsuit, that complaint, was settled and resolved because the work was covered by the prevailing wage statute. The operations and maintenance contract is not. And this court has reversed the labor commissioner before for failing to consider or even speak to a critical statutory term. In Coast Casinos, it reversed the labor commissioner because he disregarded and didn't consider the meaning of the word or. Here, this is a critical limiting prepositional phrase in the statute that the labor commissioner didn't speak to, let alone attempt to interpret. We also believe, and this is in our brief, that the labor commissioner's factual findings mandated that he conclude that the statute didn't apply. He found, we disagree with it, the 80%, but he found that 80% of the work here was maintenance work. If a contract has a purpose, surely if the result of it is 80% maintenance, its purpose, the reason it exists, it is for maintenance. It's not for construction, reconstruction, or repair. Now, the second issue I'd like to turn to is the application of 338.011, subsection 1. That's the normal operations and maintenance exception. It's a definitional provision. And even if you decide that the contract CBE 552 is a project for the maintenance or for the construction, reconstruction, or repair, it's still exempt because of 338.011, subsection 1. First, we quoted in our brief The labor commissioner didn't quote it in his decision. Neither of the respondents quoted in their briefs. They attempt to get by on a gloss on the statutory language. And I think it's important that you look back to the statute's terms for one reason. The respondents continually act as if you can parse out the repair work under this contract, CBE 552. That's not possible. That can't be reconciled with the text of the provision. Look at 338.011. It provides applicability, contracts related to normal operations and maintenance. And it provides the requirements of this chapter do not apply to a contract awarded in compliance with Chapter 332 or 333, which is directly related to the normal operations of the public body or the normal maintenance of its property.
Well, Mr. Trimmer, looking at the contract itself, it does appear to me that the parties specifically, by agreement, delineated separate maintenance functions, characterizing certain maintenance functions as routine, others as scheduled, others as non-scheduled, and others finally as corrective measures. And all of that is discussed at some length in the labor commissioner's opinion. Why shouldn't those different types of maintenance, in fact, the labor commissioner in one of the footnotes makes the point that the use of corrective maintenance may be a misnomer. Why wouldn't we give credence to the way the parties characterize these different functions? They seem to have gradations of cleaning restrooms to replacing the power system in the train.
And my response to that is that the statutory text doesn't permit the contract to be divided up that way. If it's exempt because it's a maintenance contract, it's exempt. The second part is that if you look at the context in which the statute was enacted, 338.011 was enacted to address a problem whereby incidental repair that's inherent in any maintenance regime was leading to the application of the prevailing wage statute to all of the work covered by the maintenance contract. 338.011 was enacted to eliminate that, to eliminate this tendency to chop up work under a contract that provided for both preventative maintenance and corrective maintenance, because repair was a natural part of maintaining a system, just like at 100,000 miles, sometimes you have to replace your alternator. That may be repair, that may be maintenance, but it's inherent in taking care of your car.
Well, does that approach lead to the possibility that the government can circumvent the prevailing wage requirements of the statute by how they characterize everything as maintenance?
I have two responses to that. First is that argument was made by the union and the labor commissioner in their briefs. It's circular because you have to assume in the first instance that you're circumventing something. It assumes that that work was intended to be covered by the statute. Second of all, the facts here are beyond unique. There's not another system like this that's owned by a public body within the state of Nevada. This is a critical system. We all know that it's a critical system to the operation of McCarran Airport. It makes sense for it to fall within the scope of 338.011 to prevent the state of the county and the Department of Aviation from being hijacked by prevailing wage to be able to provide this service at a price, at a cost that's reasonable to the county. That was the purpose of 338.011, and I would say that given the facts here, that at least 80%, according to the Labor Commissioner, and from our perspective, 93% of the work was maintenance, this small amount of incidental repair doesn't disqualify the contract. And the last thing I would say is, and on that point I'll cede my time to the county. First, maintenance was never intended to be covered by the statute. It was never intended to be covered by Chapter 338. This provision in the code was enacted to ensure that maintenance remained outside the scope, even though there had been an interpretation by the Attorney General that repair is sometimes inherent in maintenance. The second argument I think that's important to
remember. Mr. Kramer, you have a minute 46 total time left between the two of you and for rebuttal.
I apologize. Well, with that, I'll say that the 338011 contains no financial limitations on the money, and I'll cede my time to Ms. Walker.
Chief Justice Douglas, Justices of the Supreme Court, good morning. May it please the Court, I'm Holly Walker on behalf of Clark County. I understand that our time is limited, so I will just address a couple of primary points, one of which is Clark County joins and supports and is in agreement with Mr. Trimmer's arguments on appeal with regard to what was just presented. So the Labor Commissioner and the District Court disregarded substantial evidence of the absolute necessity of the ATS system in relation to the normal operation and maintenance of the airport, as Bombardier represented a few minutes ago. And the decision from the Labor Commissioner, as well as upheld by the District Court, undermines Clark County's common sense and reasonable interpretation of NRS 338.111, which the county has consistently applied to all of its prior maintenance contracts. But in addition to that, the primary point I wanted to make today on behalf of the county was a larger public policy issue, because this case can't be looked within a vacuum. As you know, the court knows, Clark County is the largest local government entity within the state of Nevada. And unlike other departments within Clark County, the Department of Aviation, the Department of Aviation operates about the county's general tax fund revenue. So that means that the DOA, the Department of Aviation within the Clark County system, has to have this delicate balance of being a good steward of the assets it's trusted to manage, as well as staying competitive as a self-sufficient enterprise. So what does this mean? Basically, if the Labor Commissioner's decision, as upheld by the District Court, is applied, we have this overexpansive definition of what qualifies as a public work project. And then that's going to have a direct domino effect in terms of applying economic pressures and constraints. So essentially what's going to happen is these increased costs in terms of maintenance contracts will force the Department of Aviation into situations where the department may not want to bid on maintenance contracts at all. They'll bring in their own personal employees, which will result in increased internal labor obligations, fewer bidding opportunities for contractors, and the possibility of having less sophisticated and inferior maintenance work. So thus, for all those important public policy considerations, Clark County joins and agrees with Bombardier's arguments and appeal.
Thank you.
So may I just ask one? Yes. So you're seeking a rather expansive use of the phrase directly related to the normal operation of the public body in 338.011.
Respectfully, I wouldn't characterize that as expansive. There was substantial evidence, for example, as we discussed in our brief and Bombardier addressed as well, direct testimony from Randall H. Walker, who was the former director of the Clark County Department of Aviation, presented that the ATS system is essential to the normal operation.
Right. So the logical extension of that argument is that if we weren't talking about the ATS system, let's say we're talking about the runways, if one interprets the phrase in that manner, then the runways wouldn't be subject to the prevailing wage either. Is that your position?
I wouldn't necessarily say that that would directly apply, because just as Bombardier emphasized, the ATS system is incredibly unique in terms of the functions of the airport system. So I wouldn't necessarily say it's an expansive definition, but I would argue that you can't really compare apples to oranges there, because it's a very unique system that's critical to the operation and maintenance of the airport.
Chief, may I ask a question?
Go ahead.
Ms. Walker, wouldn't apportionment is happened here satisfy the concerns of the county in this regard? So you're not paying prevailing wage for maintenance. Labor Commissioner identified an area that you should be. Doesn't apportionment in general satisfy the issues that you're raising?
I wouldn't argue that it does satisfy the issues in terms of the apportionment. You mean like the 80-20 as defined by the Labor Commissioner? I would just defer to Bombardier's point with regard to it doesn't adequately address the fact that incidental repair work, you know, transforms this contract into something that it's not.
Thank you.
Anything additional? Thank you.
Thank you.
For Commissioner, an additional 2 minutes because of the time. On rebuttal, we'll give you 1 minute.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Lawrence Van Dyke on behalf of the Nevada Labor Commissioner. And here with me at Council's table is Mr. Richard McCracken with the Elevator Constructors Union. And we're hoping to divide argument time as follows this morning. I'm going to address NRS 338, 10, and 11. And then he will address if the Court has questions about the railroad exception, the Commissioner selection, the elevator constructors rate, and this 20%, 80% divide, Your Honors. You know, Bombardier raised a lot of different arguments in their briefing and then this morning about NRS 338, 10, and 11. I think most of those arguments, or at least many of them, can be reduced to sort of one straightforward question. The answer to that question may not be straightforward, but the question itself is pretty straightforward, and that is, what is the difference between, on the one hand, repairs, which we know you have to pay prevailing wage for on repairs for publicly owned works and property, and on the other hand, ordinary maintenance, which we know that you, because of the 1981 exceptions that were passed in subsection 11, you don't have to pay prevailing wage for. That much is clear. Unfortunately, though, the dividing line between those two categories is, I don't think, clear at all. And you can see that from the legislative history and even the pre-legislative history. Back in 1944, the Attorney General's office issued an opinion that said repairs and maintenance were essentially synonymous. They were the same thing. And then, for some reason, that didn't seem to get people too exercised. But for some reason, when the Attorney General's office did it again in 1980 in the letter opinion, everybody got pretty exercised about that, including, if you look in the record, you'll see even Governor List ended up writing a letter about that saying we got to do something about this legislatively. So then in the next legislature in 1981, the legislature passed the exception, the normal, the operating, the ordinary maintenance and ordinary, the two exceptions. Now, what's the concern that was expressed was that the word repair, if it was synonymous with maintenance, would be interpreted so expansively that even fixing a lock, these are actually things that were mentioned in the legislative history, fixing a lock, a broken lock, a 15-minute job, bringing in a locksmith, fixing a broken lock, you have to bid that out and pay prevailing wage, fixing a broken window, even janitorial services. These are the types of things that were mentioned. And so to address this, the legislature first considered just taking that word repair out of the statute. If you look at the legislative history, and I encourage if the court hasn't done that, it's only about 50 pages, and it's in the record. It starts at ER 3953. And if the court does that, you'll see that their initial thought was, well, we'll just fix this by taking the word repair out. And I'll talk in a moment as to why they didn't actually ultimately do that. They deliberately decided to keep the word repair in, but then they accepted out normal maintenance. Now, the problem with that, from our perspective, all of us here, is that what the legislature essentially did to fix this concern that was raised that maintenance and repair were the same thing is say, well, you'll pay prevailing wage for repair and you won't pay prevailing wage for maintenance. Well, that's not exactly super helpful because you just took a word that a lot of people, two words that a lot of people think are synonymous and you said you're going to treat them differently. I do want to note that because I think that's important. One of Bombardier's arguments, Clark County's arguments in this is that, well, plain text demands that this isn't repairs. Well, that's hard for me to believe given that it's not at all clear. It never has been particularly clear what the difference between maintenance and repairs is. So how could the plain text be absolutely clear that this is maintenance and not repairs? But there are, so that part I don't think is particularly clear. I think it undermines the plain text argument. But there are at least four things I think we can take away from this legislative history. The first one, the most obvious one, is that the legislature intentionally decided to keep repairs where you pay prevailing wage, not just new construction, not just reconstruction, but also repairs. The second thing is that there is no, as I just mentioned, there is no easy line between repairs and ordinary and normal maintenance. I've already talked about sort of the history that led up to subsection 11, but I'll just give you an example that I think illustrates it for me, and maybe it's because I did road construction before I went to the dark side and became a lawyer, but there is no easy answer to this. If you think about the road leading into McCarran Airport, if the road leading into McCarran Airport, you had to fix a bunch of potholes in the road, and it's full of potholes, obviously pretty important to the airport to have the road leading into it so people can drive in. Would fixing all those potholes be repairs, or would it be ordinary maintenance? I don't know. That's a tough question, Your Honors. I think it could be either. Maybe it would depend on the extent or the type of the potholes. I do think that probably if you had a multi-year, multi-million dollar contract to fix those potholes, that might be closer to being on the repair side that you pay prevailing wage for, and I'll talk about the legislative history. I think it supports that. The third thing is, although the line, precisely because the line between normal maintenance and repairs is not particularly clear, I think this is one area that is especially appropriate to apply the kind of deference that your cases talk about to the agencies that are, when they draw these kind of lines. This case actually kind of reminds me a little bit of the late Justice Scalia's dissent, famous dissent in the Martin case. That was the PGA golf case, if you recall. And Justice Scalia, in a way that only he could do, said that he said that that court presented that case presented the court with the quote awesome responsibility to decide what is golf. Now, that's widely considered one of his funnier of his many funny statements, and it's funny precisely because Justice Scalia was basically saying, come on, we're a court. It's not within our judicial competence to really decide the metaphysical question of what is golf. And the same thing is kind of true here. To decide where exactly precisely that dividing line is between repairs and normal maintenance is precisely the kind of question I think, would, if anything's going to be within the kin of an agency to decide, that it would be that kind of question. The last point I want to make, which is a really important point, is that I do think the Labor Commissioner's decision here was right on the mark. It wouldn't even require deference. I think it should get deference, but it wouldn't require deference. And here's why. If you look at the legislative history, it strongly supports the line that the Labor Commissioner drew here. Here is a list. I think it's pretty much a comprehensive list. There may be one or two more things in those 50 pages of legislative history that I talked about. But here's a list of all of the things that were mentioned by people saying, we've got to add this exception for maintenance, because if we don't, these are the kinds of things that will be covered and we'll have to figure out which. Fixing a broken window. Cleaning a window. Daily housekeeping and janitorial services, general maintenance and minor repairs. Probably the most single mentioned example, I think this was at least three or four times mentioned, was replacing a single light bulb or day-to-day maintenance. These are precisely the type of things the legislature had in mind when it passed this exception, this ordinary maintenance. On the other hand, why did the legislature decide to keep in repairs when the initial draft of the bill that became subsection 11 did not have, it took the word repairs out? Why did the legislature decide? Well, the reason is, and I would urge the court to look at ER 3966. What happened is the Department of Transportation came in, and the Department of Transportation said, you know, if you take the word repairs out, we're worried about it. We have multi-million dollar highway, guess what they were called? Maintenance contracts. We have multi-million dollar maintenance. The word is right there in ER 3966. And what we're worried about is that these highway contractors won't be paying their people working on these multi-million dollar maintenance contracts anymore prevailing wage if you take the word repairs out. Unless they say, oh, we don't want to do that. So the legislature kept the word repairs in and instead accepted ordinary maintenance. Now, so all we don't know precisely where the line is, but we know that on one end of the spectrum, you've got multi-million dollar maintenance contracts. On the other spectrum, you have fixing a broken light bulb. Which one of those, you know, the legislature was not thinking about the ATS system at McCarran Airport when it did this, but which one of those is closer to this contract? Well, even if you take the 20% of a $15 million contract for over 5 years, it's a multi-million, multi-year repair contract, Your Honor. So I think the Labor Commissioner's decision to draw a line where he did is absolutely defensible. The right line certainly should get deference from this court. I do want to respond to the normal
law. Can I interrupt you one second? Going back to the maintenance contract itself, it's broken down into several different aspects of maintenance. And so essentially what you're saying is the provision concerning major maintenance is a repair. And they've even defined that as replacing major reparable units, performing major repairs, rebuilding or overhauling major components. So it's the same thing as what you're saying.
I think that's absolutely right, Your Honor. I think, and I'll talk in a second about what I call Bombardier's all-or-nothing argument, both our kinds of all-or-nothing argument. This idea that, well, the predominance argument is 80%, so I'll talk, and so we should just not pay prevailing wage for any of it. I'll talk about that in a second because they sort of shifted and they kind of now recognize that, I think you heard this morning, they think the line's at 90, they think the Labor Commissioner split the baby went with 80, they think it should be at 93%. So at least by even this morning you heard this, they think 7% of this is repairs, but they have this all or nothing argument. And I'll talk about the all or nothing argument now since we're there. Their all or nothing argument started in their opening brief as, well, a contract essentially has to be entirely for repairs, or you don't pay prevailing wage. And they put a lot of weight on the word for you heard it again this morning, somehow the idea that the word for means the project has to be entirely for prevailing wage type work. They shifted, and I think it's sort of an implicit admission of the weakness of their all or nothing. They shifted in the reply brief on page 819 of the reply brief. They now have a predominance type. Now, I don't know where they get the word predominance out of the statute, but they say, well, if it's predominantly for repair work, then you should pay prevailing wage. But it's still an all or nothing argument, because I think their position is you've got to go contract by contract. You can't break a contract up, I think, Justice Harsty, as you were talking about, or no, I think Justice Stiglitz, you mentioned it. You can't break a contract up. That's kind of their position. A couple of responses to that. One is their textual for argument doesn't actually lead to that conclusion at all. It's a classic either or false dilemma fallacy. It's the idea that because something is for one thing, it can't be for something else. But just because a contract might be for ordinary maintenance, it could also be for repairs. That's, you know, the name for that fallacy. It's the false dilemma fallacy.
It has to be, if the car won't go to the C gate and the D gate, it's certainly a repair.
Say that again, Your Honor.
If the car would not go to the C gate or the D gate, it's certainly a repair.
You have to fix it. And even if it's not broken, but you have to replace a major component, you can fix potholes. You know, you can dig out a section that looks like it's going to become a pothole and fix that pothole.
Well, it's not a maintenance issue when a car won't run. I mean, one thing we all know is riding those cars to the sea gates because of Southwest.
Yeah, it's definitely. So the main thing.
Although I like to walk, to tell you the truth.
So I want, for their textual argument to work, the reality is they're reading in the words like the word only or the word solely. And so NRS would have.
Actually focusing a bit on public work means any project for the new construction, repair, or construction, et cetera, whereas this 338.011 talks about the requirements of this chapter do not apply to a contract awarded in compliance, which is directly related. So their argument is that this contract is directly related to the normal operation of the public body so that Justice Cherry doesn't have to walk, or the normal maintenance of its property.
Right.
So same. So they're saying it's an encompassing contract that you can't balkanize into separate subparts of and examine each particular within that. And so it's not a project. It's an ongoing maintenance and preventative maintenance. And, so, you know, every 50,000 miles, those cars need new brakes or whatever to prevent them from crashing. I don't know what their exact problems are. But I think it's a little more sophisticated than you're making it sound. It doesn't just divide on repair maintenance, but it also divides on contract project.
That's what I mean by the all or nothing argument is you have to go by contract, and any particular contract is going to be either all prevailing wage or no prevailing wage. And so initially I think they kind of started as an all repairs, but then they imported this predominance statement. It really isn't in there at all. It isn't in there as far as the textual matter. But they said, if it's all, and so here's the problem I think I see with their argument. It's a very practical problem, Your Honor. If they're right that it has to go by contract, then we really do have a circumvention problem, because then if you had 1% of a contract, if you had 1% of a contract that was for non-prevailing wage type work, then they say, well, the contract's not for prevailing wage type work, or they say the exception, because it's a contract, if you look at subsection 11, because it's a contract that's related to the normal maintenance and it doesn't apply. So ultimately,
it's directly related.
Yeah, no, directly is important because they're trying to, this goes to their, which I'll talk about their normal operation. I think their normal operation argument ignores the word directly, Your Honor. But the key is, I think it would have to have the word solely, only, or predominantly in either one of those statutes for their argument to actually be required by the text.
Well, why doesn't directly do that job?
Say again.
Why doesn't the word directly related do that job?
Well, I think what the word directly is doing is, Your Honor, if the word directly wasn't in there, what project doesn't have something to do with the normal operations of a building? A building blows up and it has to be completely rebuilt. You say, well, it has something to do with the normal operations. Until we get this thing rebuilt, we can't use it. But everybody agrees. In fact, Clark County agrees on page 4 of their brief that actually the original construction of the ATS and any major rehabilitation of the ATS itself, you would have to pay prevailing wage. And so,
right.
So I think the problem with their argument, their all or nothing argument, is that, well, first of all, I think.
But let me, we're running out of time. I have another question. Yeah. Is there a reason to treat these as unitary and not subdivide them because of the difficulties in going back and sorting through, well, this was a repair, this was maintenance, this was major, this was minor, so on and so forth. Is there a reason legislatively to credit what seems to be a solitary contract for, you know, that's directly related to maintenance or operations is exempt from this chapter, and they define contract to be the written contract? Is there a reason to do that because of the necessity for predictability and not going back and having this 80-20, 90-10 kind of guesswork after the fact?
Your Honor, you're hitting on something I think kind of goes right to the heart of this case, and it's the difficulty of should we take their all-or-nothing approach and say the contract has to be all-or-nothing, and then we have to decide if we're going to do that, where we're going to break it up, because there's going to be contracts that have both of them. Right? This one's got it, other ones are going to have that. And so the question is going to be, what do you do as a court? Because you have to interpret legally what this language means. You've got two provisions. First point I wanted to make is the language of the statute itself does not require the result they're saying. That they're putting too much weight on the word for. It would have to have something like only or predominantly.
I understand your point.
So the question is how does this court interpret it? And my view would be, Your Honor, the labor commissioner's interpretation is the most consistent with the context here. You have a provision that says prevailing wage will be paid for repairs. You have an exception that was made that says prevailing wage won't be paid for normal maintenance. And the labor commissioner said, legally, he doesn't say this explicitly, but he says implicitly, I can break these up. And you're saying, well, what if you can't? My view is, I think that's the most consistent with what the legislature did. They have it gives effect to both 10 and 11. So if this is too confusing, the legislature can fix it. I mean, that's the thing here. Like, if the court says, okay, we think it's okay for you to break these up, then everybody goes to the legislature and says, oh, that's going to cause all kinds of problems if you allow us to break, then the legislature can fix that. And that's what I think. I think that if it creates a problem, the legislature will fix it. But I do think that the labor commissioner's ultimate view that we could, you know, we're going to go partly one way and partly the other is the most faithful, because it gives credence to both 10-16 and 11, Your Honor. So I think it's the best.
Mr. Van Dyke, you've left Mr. McCracken about 40 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning, and may it please the court. Fortunately, I agree with everything that my colleague has said. But I want to bring a few points to the court's attention. First of all, this contract was not for operation of the ATS. 2.1.1 of the contract specifies that the operation of the train will be done by county personnel. There was a control center, and they were the ones who were actually...
Mr. Crawford, see what you can clean up in a minute.
Thank you, Your Honor. Secondly, the contractor was obligated to keep detailed records of what work was being performed. That's in 2.1.7 of the contract. They didn't do that. They just had everybody put in general recovery. If they'd followed the contract and kept detailed records of what was being done, then this apportionment would not be so difficult. However, they also, the mechanics themselves, prepared worksheets showing exactly what they did. And those were the basis of Union Exhibit 1, because it showed all the heavy maintenance they were doing. And it was quite heavy. They did not do any cleaning work. That was all subcontracted to other people. The mechanics simply did mechanics work. And if you look at the tool list that was admitted into evidence, you'll see that this is not something that is equivalent to changing light bulbs. This was heavy-duty work that they were performing and highly skilled.
Mr. McCracken, 2.6.1 references heavy maintenance and overhaul, and it speaks to what I would consider to be pretty significant repairs. But it also addresses the fact that this work is subject to the owner's approval. Were those items identified and approved by the owner as they went along?
There's nothing in the record to show that, and there's nothing, to my knowledge, where that was documented. I think it was just done. And it was done with respect to multiple parts of this contract. There is the vehicle part that says that. There's also the power distribution part that says mm-hmm. it. And there's also the train control equipment. So there were three areas where that kind of major maintenance was done. And one of the things about this type of work, like elevator constructors, it requires not just mechanical skill, but also computer and electronic skill. If you look at the tool list, you'll see that some of their tools were electrical tools and computers that they used for this, which is what elevator constructors do and is not what millwrights do. I wanted to take just a second to address the argument that's made for the first time in this court by Bombardier that the appropriate classification would have been millwright and not elevator constructor. This was not an argument made to the Labor Commissioner, and so, of course, can't be considered. But it is the fundamental issue that is raised, especially in the reply brief, to show that the Labor Commissioner was wrong in using the elevator constructor classification. In fact, millwrights, as the Department of Labor occupational definition show and the Labor Commissioner's description shows, is an industrial job. These are the workers who put in equipment in industrial factories and remove it. And yes, they install monorails. They install monorails for moving car parts around, not people. All the people movement is done by the elevator constructors. Again, as the Labor Commissioner's classification description shows, as well as the DOL, they're the ones who work on elevators, who work on other people moving equipment like escalators and moving walkways.
And Mr. McGrath, I'm going to cut you off at this point.
Thank you very much, Your Honor.
Mr. Trimmer, you have 1 minute rebuttal.
Just a couple of points. It's important to take this back not to the arguments made by counsel in their briefs, but take it back to the Labor Commissioner's decision. The Labor Commissioner never addressed the prepositional praise for. That's the first statutory argument we made. His failure to address that or even consider the argument makes the decision unsupportable. It certainly isn't entitled to deference. Our second is, if you look at the Labor Commissioner's decision, he didn't disagree with our interpretation of 338.011. He found that the train wasn't directly related to the normal operation of the airport because the airport could still function if the train didn't work. He didn't disagree with our interpretation of the statute. He disagreed with the facts, and the facts can't be supported by any reasonable person who's ever been to McCarran Airport, that the airport runs normally if you don't get on the train. The last
How do you get to the D gates?
The D gates, you can't get to the D gates at all without the train.
Right.
And the last thing I would say is we think it's very important to focus back on what the Labor Commissioner said. This is a statutory interpretation case, and to the extent it's entitled to deference at all, the deference is to whether or not it's persuasive, and it's not close.
Chief, may I ask a quick question?
Go ahead.
Sir, do you agree with the Labor Commissioner's definition of normal maintenance?
No.
Okay.
I don't.
Okay. Thank you.
Anything else? Of course, thanks to parties for their comments and arguments and recitations of the record. With that, this matter will stand.